All right, so tonight is the class is called How to Raise a Kosher Dog. And what I want to show in this example, we're going to learn together, is that most people think about Judaism. Where does Judaism exist? Oh, Judaism's in the temples, in the synagogue. Or Judaism exists in the kitchen, right? And Judaism exists in like the Beit Midrash where we learn Torah. What I want to share with you that Judaism is an entire lifestyle. And areas that you would think that would have nothing to do with Judaism, i.e. raising and maintaining a dog or any pet, actually is a very Jewish issue. And there's a Jewish way to do it, and there's a very non-Jewish way to do it. So we're going to start with a video, because I like to start class with a video. All right? And I sent you guys out a sheet, but you don't need it right now. And we're going to go to, and we, as they say, let's go to the videotape.
Morning walk almost turns deadly for a Boise family's German Shepherd. The near tragedy shines a light on the city's leash regulations. Karen Lehr joins us live in studio with more on that story.
Michelle, a couple walking their two dogs through that Boise neighborhood said they felt threatened by the German Shepherd running toward them, and that's why the man pulled out his gun and shot the dog. Luckily, Dahlia, the German Shepherd, will be okay. However, it could be her owners who face a fine for not having her on a leash. An average Sunday morning in a Boise neighborhood quickly turned into a bloody mess when Dahlia, a young German Shepherd, sprinted toward two dogs walking down her street.
But she's not aggressive in any way. She never attacked. She never barked. She didn't try to bite anybody. She was playing. I mean, she was wanting to play with the other dogs until she was shot.
A man walking his two dogs with his wife pulled out a firearm and shot Dahlia, worried she would attack them or their animals. Boise City Code says all dogs are required to be on a leash in public unless in a specified off-leash area.
So the owner of the animal is responsible for any action that happens. They are supposed to maintain their animal at all times.
That means Dahlia's owners could possibly face a dog-at-large fine for violating the city code. Some Boise dog owners feel for Dahlia, and although most regularly follow leash guidelines, one owner says pulling a gun is excessive.
She is excitable. She is only a year and a half, and she does like to go meet and greet and be like, oh my gosh, hi, let's be best friends. But I don't know what to think of someone shooting my dog because she wanted to go see hi. Like, I don't know, like, it just makes me want to cry a little bit.
The city of Boise has four entirely off-leash parks and several other areas that allow dogs off-leash at certain times. City leaders say the leash requirements are in everybody's best interest to keep public places safe. But for owners who understand sometimes dogs just need to let loose, making a trip to a designated off-leash park is well worth it.
Oh my gosh, if we don't, she has what we call crazy puppy hour, where she like runs figure eights in our little backyard. I'm just grateful that we have off-leash places where she can run and sniff and be a dog.
If you're caught with your dog off-leash outside of the specified areas, your first offense will get you an $81 fine, and an additional offense within the same calendar year will raise $25 each time. For more information on where you can take your dog off-leash, log on to IdahoOnYourSide.com. Live in studio, I'm Karen Lehr, Fox 9 On Your Side.
Okay. There you have it. Okay, so so here's my question to you. Did the person act properly in shooting the German Shepherd? And do the owners deserve a fine? What do you guys say?
I would say it might be Pekuach Nefesh.
You're now...
Their thought was...
Well, now they were not... They were... Now, why did the guy... In other words, we have the couple and they have the two dogs. They're walking down the street. They're taking care of their dogs properly. They're following the leash law. Then this you know, young but large German Shepherd comes shooting out, and they felt very scared. They felt in harm's way, and because it's Boise, Idaho, the guy was packing some heat, pulled out his gun and shot. But of course, did not kill the German Shepherd because this was not a good shot, and shot the animal. So now, so the question is, let's go around. You guys can use the chat. Tell me, put on the chat, if you think that the person acted properly. Just write the word properly or improperly. Just put it on the chat. Okay. All right. So Michael Savitsky says properly. That dog deserved it. And Raven properly. Erica says improper. Nicole says proper. Daniel Wallach hedging properly only if they felt it was life versus death. Michael says just shoot him. Damn it. Just shoot him. Okay. All right, you want to be, you want to, now everybody makes a little notice that you just do want to be, you want to be on your best behavior when you're hanging out with Michael Savitsky, because he's quick on the draw.
Keep your animals back.
Okay, Dylan says improper, and Melissa says, can we apply ox laws to a dog? Okay, we're gonna explore that. All right, so basically everybody split. We have a division of the class. The class is not unanimous on this point. All right? And then I guess now the next question. Put it on the chat. Do the owners deserve a fine? No, I'm sorry. Do the owners of the German Shepherd, I mean, who was without, who did not, who ran out to the street without a leash? Okay, everybody's saying yes on that. Everybody's saying, yeah, they very simple. Dog ran out. Idaho has a leash law. The dog had no leash. $81 for them. Boom.
Well, I mean, I think they deserve a fine if their dog didn't die. I think since their dog then was sentenced to death, perhaps that negates the need for them to be fined.
All right, so you're saying since the dog was shot at and was wounded, albeit it did survive, that should be fine enough.
Well, it needs to be, I don't know. If it's just to be a deterrent, I don't think they're going to have their dog off a leash anymore.
Yeah, I think they got the message. Message sent, message delivered. That's it. Okay, now, all right, so... So let me guys ask you the question. If anybody want to take the people who want to advocate that it was proper for the guy to take the gun out and shoot the dog, who would like to present that position? And I'm looking at my link. So Michael Savitsky was a quick on the draw. Michael Savitsky, defend why using a weapon against that delicious little German Shepherd was justified. Go ahead.
I like that you said quick on the draw. I think, now here's the thing. I think that if they didn't have a gun, they would be doing what somebody else who's scared of a dog would be doing if they thought that their life was in danger, which is attack the dog, maybe like hit him or like kick him or something like that. If that person happened to have a gun, and if she saw the dog as a threat, then yeah, he could shoot him, or she could shoot him.
Right. In other words, a galloping 50-pound German Shepherd, which is running toward you, is a threat to your physical... To your well-being, and you have a right not to be mauled, and therefore you can use a gun to deter that animal. That's your argument,
right? Yeah.
Okay. For those who feel that was an improper action, what do you say to Michael Savitsky's point? Who wants to say why it's improper? All right, Dylan, go for it, Dylan.
Improper because you should never use a gun unless you feel that your life is in jeopardy. And in the sense, like, I mean, unless you're, like, I don't know, a very weak human, I think if you're up against a dog, I don't think the dog can kill you. So I don't think your life is in jeopardy. Yeah, maybe you'll get bitten by the dog, but you can still kick the dog. Like, there are other options than using a gun. But also, I thought originally in this case that the person killed the dog.
Right. No, it shot it, it wounded it, but the dog survived. Because, again, you know, whatever. But so your basic your argument back to Michael Savitsky is, yes, you have a right to ensure that you do not get injured, but since you had a non-lethal or excessive manner of protecting yourself, i.e. kicking the dog, that should have been used, and therefore you have no right to take out a gun and shoot the animal, correct?
And it's not even that. It's also, like, dogs not on a leash, don't know where the owner is. You shoot a dog, bullet can get stuck in the dog and still kill the dog. The dog could bleed out, which is technically torturing an animal.
Okay.
Which is like, if you kick a dog and he runs away scared, that's one thing. If he bleeds to death, you just tortured an animal.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let's say that dog was a pit bull, okay, which can kill you. You know what I mean? Can cause extreme damage. Okay, let's say that's the situation, and then you do feel at tremendous risk of your health and well being. Are you ever justified? In other words, to save a human, are you allowed to kill a dog? Let's start with the most basic, most extreme question. What do you guys say? Put on the chat. Are you allowed to kill a dog to save a human? Let's say there was a 4-year-old kid and there was this pit bull running out and you shot the, and you, can you shoot the dog to save the kid?
It's an unfair circumstance.
Okay, so we're saying, yeah, everybody, Dylan says yes. Michael, of course, says yes.
That's only because a human soul outweighs an animal soul.
Okay, so fine. So you're saying that the human life is more valuable than an animal, okay? Daniel Walk says, put that pup down. Okay. So the bottom line is, so everybody agrees that clearly if it's the life and well-being of a human, you can kill the dog. The debate is if you're going to get injured. And by the way, a German Shepherd is not like a little poodle. A German Shepherd is a very strong and powerful animal. You know what I'm saying? They use them as guard dogs for a reason. They're extremely intimidating. They are very, they're scary. They're scary creatures. If you own one, of course, you have a loving relationship. But if they're on attack mode against you, it's going to be painful, okay? That you can end up getting very harmed. Okay, now, there we go. So I want to continue. All right, so that's the debate. I hear that now we're going to get some more information for us to make even a more thoughtful decision here. Now, question number two, to explore this a little more, what is the mentality of dog owners that allow them not to listen to the rules? In other words, in Manhattan, okay, I'm walking, I know, you're walking down 86th Street, you always got to keep your eye on the ground, because what will you find? You might find some what they call shoe debris. You might be walking into some shoe debris, because not everybody in Manhattan is conscientious about having their animal relieve itself and taking its remains, its waste, with them, and therefore they're leaving the shoe debris. So,
I have to say that happened to me recently, and it was very unfortunate.
There you go. Catherine was victimized just recently with some shoe debris. That's it.
I've got enough going on right now.
Right, and quite frankly, she did not really need that.
I certainly did not.
Okay, so my question is, I want to go into the mindset of a pet owner, of a dog owner. Why do they, and I see this all the time, that they do not follow the leash rules? All right, Erica, you gotta weigh in here, Erica. Come on.
No, I just want to say my dog sometimes
sometimes has better manners than many humans I've come in contact with. My dog, she fasts on Yom Kippur. How about that?
Uh-oh.
I put a bowl of food and she doesn't touch it. There was this one, I learned from one rabbi that said that dogs were bad Jews from a former life and that they come back reincarnated. And I think my dog is trying to make
teshuva.
I think
right. There you go. There is that. The,
but it's a sentiment, you know? The animals, it's like unconditional love. They cannot express it to you. They might, but they still. Their brains, the way they register, they know when something's wrong with you. You have this like emotional connection that it's like, and they're your babies. Like I always tell my friends, I'm like, this is my fur baby.
Okay, so Erica expressed it very well. In other words, that a dog, when a person has a dog or a cat, that is not a pet. That is psychologically a child. For example, they did a great experiment. They go to people, who, you know, in parks, all right, and they say, and the guy has a little suitcase with $100,000 cash and says, will you sell your dog for $100,000 cash? See, Erica said quickly no. Now, reality is that her dog or similar dog probably be purchased for $500 to $1,000. Would you agree with that, Erica?
Yeah.
Okay. So she could make a profit of $99,000, but she's going to walk away from the cash, and there's one reason why, because that is not a commodity. It's not a furry dog commodity. That dog is Erica.
It's a living thing.
It's more than a living thing. That's your child right now. That if you go to people who are pet people, they'll always say that the dog is part of the family. Now making that logical step, let's go on. So why do we go to Manhattan? Do you see dog people not having the dogs on a leash?
It depends. Like, you could see them in front of their sidewalks, but that's, I mean, I personally don't do this because I fear for my dog, for her security and her safety, but people do it because they think that their dog is overly trained and they're confident that their dog isn't going to disobey them.
Exactly. In other words, so they imagine that their dog is their child. And not only is it their child, but it's their very obedient child. Okay? All right? And therefore, they can't imagine that. And therefore, they are confident that the dog is not going to hurt anybody. Now, question number three is: what is the inherent logic about parks' dog regulations? Why are there regulations? Why do you need to have? Why in a park do you have to have? This is a park where you have a dog run, where the dog can be free. This is where you have to have it on a leash. What is it? If the dog is in fact the person's child, and not only the child, but the obedient child, why are there regulations at all? Why is that not enough?
To ensure public safety and shalom bayit, to have harmony, that everyone's happy.
Why wouldn't everybody happy? Why doesn't everybody believe that, you know, your dog, Erica, Neshama, is an obedient dog? How come everybody's not going to buy that?
So someone who's bit by a dog as a kid and is definitely afraid of them. My biggest fear is when people, because dog come running after me, and every single dog owner says, oh no, my dog's fine, like Erica just said, but I don't know that, you know.
Right.
I just see an animal running at me.
Correct. I know many people, not just Melissa, who have been traumatized by dogs that were overly aggressive, even bit. I know a number of people, and therefore for life. And people, and have you ever seen a situation where a dog, a large dog, I'm going to say a 40, 50-pound Labrador, running towards you in full sprint and jumps upon you, as a function of what? Love and affection. I want, as the woman in the video says, they want to be besties, okay? Now, but for you, you see this enraged animal You don't know what's going to happen. So the bottom line is that the regulations are there because since people do not relate to their animals in that way, they relate to them, they view them that if I love them and they listen to me, that everybody should love them and they are not dangerous. But in fact, pets cause damage to people all the time, like the case of here where the dog ran out toward the other dogs. So let's get into some more halacha here. I'm gonna now do a little share screen. Here we go. This is the sheet I sent you guys. Who would like to read? Let's read this little halacha here. All right, Daniel Wallach, give me your best reading of the Rambam. This is from the Laws of the Damage to Property, Chapter 5, Halacha number 9. Take it away.
Similarly, our sages forbade raising pigs in all places. Also, our sages forbade raising dogs unless they are tied by a chain. One may, however, raise dogs in a city near the border. During the day, the dog should be chained and at night let loose. Our sages said, cursed be the one who raises dogs and pigs because they frequently cause a great degree of damage.
Okay, so what's the difference between raising dogs versus having a pet? What's the difference between raising dogs and just having a pet?
Oh, is this like for attack purposes?
Well, a person who's who's raising dogs, well, those are, you're raising dogs, and what's the they could be for a number of reasons. They could be for, yeah, you're raising dogs to be guard dogs. What is the problem if you're raising many dogs? Now, according to Jewish law, can you have a kennel? Can you have a dog raising kennel?
Yeah, I think so.
Provided, what is the requirement?
That they probably have a fence around them.
Right. It says our sages forbade raising dogs unless they're tied by a chain, which means that basically that you have an absolute, 100% foolproof way of ensuring that they do not get out. Okay? So that, by the way, so raising dogs is viewed, unless properly maintained, is what? Is a danger to society if they're not chained up. Now, he says, if you raise it near the border, why can you leave them out at night? Why are you let them loose at night?
Because allegedly no one else is out?
Nobody's else out and out who's not, you know, the people are in their house. And if you're near the border, they function as a deterrent. I have been, you know, one of the things they, in Israel, in the West Bank, you have these settlements. So they have a fence around the settlement, and sometimes they have a fence, a double fence. And then in the middle, between the fence, they allow dogs to, you know, guard dogs to travel through that fence just as a deterrent. And, you know, because they're, you know, dogs are great for what, you know, for protecting from danger. So you see here clearly that dogs in an that if you are an owner of raising dogs, like many dogs here, that functions as a danger to society unless all the proper precautions are made, and it's on you. Now are all dogs the same? Do all dogs carry the same amount of threat?
No.
They, of course not. Little poodles versus, you know, large Labradors, German Shepherds, and pit bulls are obviously have a different level of threat. Well, that's relevant. Let's keep on going. All right, so let me have Melissa Gitman read the from the Talmud here.
A certain woman enters a neighbor's house to bake their bread, and a dog suddenly barked at her, but the owner of the house said to her, "Do not be afraid of the dog, for its teeth are gone." She, however, said to him, "Take thy kindness and throw it on the thorns, for the embryo has already been moved from its place."
Okay, so it's a little bit of a cryptic language. But who can figure out what happened to the woman?
She got bit by a dog.
Well, she, he just says he barked at her, but what happened to her?
She got scared.
And for the embryo has already moved from its place. What did she just say just happened?
She had a miscarriage?
She had a miscarriage. Now, what was the dog, now the dog owner says, oh, you don't have to worry. Why? Its teeth are gone. In other words, it's an older dog. It has a great bark, but it has no threat. So, what was the mentality of the dog owner here?
The dog can't hurt you because there's no teeth.
Right, dog can't hurt you, but what is the dog owner forgetting or not being sensitive about?
That other people aren't used to being around dogs.
And there's other damage that a dog can do. Frightening somebody, especially a woman in this vulnerability, she had a miscarriage. I've seen many situations. You have a visualize in a park, a 6-year-old girl. She's walking in the park, and suddenly this 60-pound, 50-pound Labrador comes running at her at 30 miles an hour, jumps all over her. She's screaming and crying, you know, and then somebody comes in there and gets the dog away. The dog, she wasn't killed by the dog. She may be only lightly injured, but she is psychologically damaged. She's been traumatized. And Halacha recognizes that there's different kinds of damage. There's a physical damage. This woman had a miscarriage. That's a tremendous damage. Let's keep on going. Now, very important to say, all right, let me have Nicole read it out. Laws of Injury and Damages, Tort Law, Chapter 1, Law Number 11. Take it away.
Can you guys hear me okay?
We hear you beautifully. Excellent microphone.
Wonderful. A man is considered ma'ad at all times, whether acting intentionally or unintentionally, whether asleep or awake or intoxicated. If he injures a colleague or damages a colleague's property, he must always reimburse him from his choice's property.
Okay, so you may have read, this goes back to the ox was mentioned by Melissa in the chat. What is a shore muad? There are two categories of a ox. There's an ox which is a muad, and there's an ox which is a tam. Anybody know? Everybody heard that before?
No.
Okay. A muad means that they are prone to gore, prone to damage. Okay, and therefore if you have a goring ox, you are responsible to keep it in the highest level of, you know, corrals and fences. And if the animal slips out, you are 100% responsible because the animal had a status of a damager. What is a person defined as? According to the eyes of Halacha, a person, an individual, man or woman, is defined as a muad. What does that mean?
Has the potential to be damaging.
And therefore, if they do damage, what's their liability?
They are liable.
They're liable. Simple case. You're in the store. You're looking between two tomato sauces. One slips out of your hand. It was an accident. It crashes to the ground. According to Jewish law, do you have to pay Trader Joe's $2.50 or you don't? You have to pay. Now, they have a customer service mentality that they don't charge customers who drop and damage the food on the ground. They don't do that. If you go into a antique shop and you look at a nice vase and you drop it, they will probably make you pay. According to Jewish law, are they acting properly?
Yep.
Yes, they are. Because you're always responsible. Let's say somebody had a pair of $100 Ray-Bans on the couch. You saw it, you fell asleep, you rolled on it, it broke. Are you responsible for its repair? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes, you are. You're in the parking lot of the mall. You open the door and you ding the door of the next door, you know, Honda Accord, and you give it a gazunt scratch, are you responsible for the damage?
Yes.
You are 100%. It's very simple. You damage it, you're responsible. Is there any such thing as doing things by accident?
Yes, but you're still responsible.
You're still responsible because you are defined as a muad, which is, this shows you a little bit of difference of Jewish law. What is the mentality toward damage a Jew must have? What must be our stance about damage? Not only to avoid it, but you have to be extremely careful about the property of other people, because if you damage them, you are responsible. So the main point here is that insofar as the raising a kosher dog, right, raising a kosher dog, in other words, it's not about, since the dog is my child, everybody has to love them like I do. No, I have to be very careful that I have to ensure that my dog does not damage anybody. Either A, by pooping on the sidewalk and causing shoe debris, as Catherine pointed out, or B, scares people, which can cause trauma, or the extreme case of the Talmud extreme case, which always likes to teach through the extreme case, a miscarriage, or worse, or getting actually physically bit, or worse. You have to be excellent. The key thing is that you have to be vigilant to avoid damaging the property of others. Now, it's interesting that Maimonides has his famous Mishnah Torah. It's composed of 14 books. One of the 14 books is the Book of Damages, which is all we call in law, the tort law, basically the laws of damages. And then he put a thematic pasuk, a thematic verse on that. It says, "Hatli bi el edvosecha v'al el betza." Direct my heart toward your testimonies and not after running after money. What is the mentality that a Jew has to have when it comes to the property of others, the well-being of others? What is the major principle? What is the basic principle here? What's the basic goal? What's the basic idea about insofar as treating people's property?
You break it, you buy it.
You break it, you buy it, but more in addition to that, you have to be actually concerned about, in other words, you have to be concerned about the well-being, the emotional well-being of a person, and you have to be concerned about the financial well-being of a person, and it's part of the grand mitzvah, Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, you should love your fellow Jew as yourself. That which is negative, that which you think is harmful, you should not harm somebody else, and you have to be conscientious to protect the health and well-being and property of your fellow Jew. Now, people, and there is no idea of a by accident. If you back into a car, again, if the car and the car was sitting there, you're responsible. The fact that you were distracted, it's not an excuse. The fact that, you know, you do incidental damage. Now, the person could say, don't worry about it, and that's fine. But this is a change of mentality. So even the dog, which a person views as part of the member of the family, it's not like a nice thing. It's a violation of Jewish law to allow it to go out damaging. Now, I just went bike riding in the park 2 days ago. I passed three dog owners who had their dog free from the leash next to them. Or they're walking with their dog in the park, right? Because the dog likes that. They don't want to have the hassle of the dog being, you know, muzzled by the thing. And they don't care. Because their mentality is, this is my dog. I want to enjoy my dog in the way that we, our dog family, normally is. To be free and to enjoy the fresh air, right? And meanwhile, as a bicyclist, just as a story, when I was 18 years old, I was training for a triathlon. And I lived in Seattle, Washington. There's a beautiful park called Seward Park. And I was zipping around, maybe going 30 miles an hour. I looked up, I saw a tennis ball coming toward me. I looked down, and there was a 70-pound Labrador running. But the only way that dogs can do, they can run in one direction, but sort of look the other way, like behind them. The dog did not see me. I was going too fast. I hit the dog. I went off out of my bike. I was wearing a helmet. Landed on my face. Knocked out my front tooth and got a gash out of my chin. Now, of course, when do all accidents happen? Of course, Erev Shabbos. Of course. And they were playing catch with their dog in the middle of the street. Okay? And yeah, so I'm a little bit sensitive to this issue. And they felt like, hey, you know, it's a beautiful day. We're in Seattle. It's like awesome. And it is awesome in Seattle when it's not raining. And even though it was not an area for dogs to be without a leash, I had oral surgery and, you know, and I have a fake tooth. So so that's a good example. So dogs and cats and whatever animals that you have are responsible. Your children, God willing, you have to be responsible. Or if your kid goes and then touches something and knocks it over, are you responsible? I mean, you're responsible to take care of your kids, so that's it. So I'm just sort of, it's a basic, in other words, this area, what I want to share with you, the sort of in closing, is that you would imagine raising a dog has nothing to do with Judaism. Just the opposite. I'll share another halakha about raising a kosher dog. Imagine you come home after a long day of work. It's 6 o'clock. And you bought some takeout food.
You have to feed the dog before.
Oh, very good, Erica.
Yeah.
And you have a dog, and its bowl of it's empty. It is. You are not allowed to take one bite of that food until that dog gets food.
Why?
Because there's a thing called Tsar Bali Chaim. You're not allowed to cause pain to the animal. And the way that was halachically structured is that you have to ensure that its food and drink is taken care of continuously. So much so, we know that when we wash our hands for our motzi, we don't talk till we eat the bread. But if you realized after you wash your hands, before eating the bread, that the dog's bowl of food is not filled, you can say, hey, Joe, could you put some of the delicious dog food in the bowl? It's not defined as an interruption because it's viewed as being something which is integral for the meal because you're not allowed to have a meal until the animal is taken care of. So there's an obvious, therefore we have a great concern about, we talked about the first part, most of it is the dog as the damager, but you have to have when you have a dog, you have a responsibility. And the responsibility is to take care of the basic needs of the animal. You have to avoid, there's a prohibition to call it, we have to be concerned about people, but we're also concerned about Tsar Bale Chaim. You're not allowed to inflict needless pain on any animal, whether it's your pet or any animal. In other words, I can't just go to a dog that I see and give it a kick. Can't do it. It's not just like a nice thing to do. It's actually halachically prohibited. They're also Hashem's creatures. You have to have respect. You have to validate that. You have to be concerned about all creations. Not the same level of a human, you don't want to get to the level of like the PETA organization, who are, you know, who have a radical approach that they view a human and an animal on the same level. But to be concerned about the health and well-being of an animal is a critical component. Okay. Any questions about that? We covered a lot of territory.
I've asked this many times and I've gotten many different answers.
Okay.
At least in the Orthodox communities that NJ has sent me to throughout New York, and why do so few modern Orthodox Jews have pets?
That's an excellent question. I live in West Hempstead. There actually are a fair amount of dog owners. There are amount. But in the yeshivish world, like the black hat, it's very rare to see a dog. That's a very good question. So I'm going to give you a theory. I don't know for sure. So one aspect is an idea that it's not a Jewish, it's a cultural phenomena. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't part of their culture. Now, why that is, I'm not entirely clear about that. I don't know why. But so therefore, that was the culture in Europe. And that sort of got transported. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. That became sort of like identifies that Gentiles, they have these animals. And that became sort of like a non-Jewish thing. But there is, as we see, the Rambam we read is that obviously you can be a dog, you can have a kennel. You just have to make sure that you're doing your due diligence about the, chaining them up and making sure that they're not running out. But you can certainly have animals.
Can you buy pork products to serve your dog?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. You're not allowed, you're not allowed to eat pork. But you can get benefit from pork. They made a separate prohibition of you can't raise pigs, and you can't be involved in serving pork as a restaurant. Okay, because in that situation, if you cook it, you tend to eat it. You tend to taste. It's hard to be a chef and not taste. So they made a general. But if your animal eats pork, no problem. You can't get benefit from milk and meat. Interesting. They made milk and meat, an animal, meat that's cooked with milk, that you can't have benefit from it. So that would be prohibited to serve your dog.
A milk and meat product is prohibited to serve your dog?
Yes.
And why not? Wait, why is that and not pork?
Because the prohibition of milk and meat, of eating, there are three prohibitions of milk and meat. Cooking it, eating it, and getting benefit. Benefit is certainly feeding your animal, selling it, giving it as gifts. Pork only has one prohibition. You can't eat it. But you can get benefit from it.
Okay. Let's say you're, for some reason, your dog food involves chametz. Do you rid that for the week of Passover?
Yes.
Yes.
Correct. Yeah, because for the very same reason, because chametz, you can't eat it, and you can't own it, and you can't have benefit. So if I feed it to my dog, I am owning it, and I'm getting benefit.
So when is the OU going to start certifying dog food? I feel like that's an untapped market.
They do have lists of kosher, kosher to give your animals, yes. Certainly, it comes out for Passover because you really want to find out that which is for the chametz problem. So that's just it. All right, so we covered some territory. Any other questions? All right, guys.
One of the answers I got from one of the yeshivish families was something about the dogs and the Nazis.
Yeah, That is bad memories. I will grant you that. But even in Europe, it didn't seem there were big dog owners before the Nazi regime. The more modern you get, the more frequent you see dog owners. My Rosh Yeshiva, the head of my yeshiva, he was a long-term dog owner.
Mm. Rabbi, can we say a bracha? Like, I personally, I know
I've asked this before, like, I know, like, Hanukkah, I can light the menorah and the dog is next to me, but then there's certain things, like, with Kiddush that I put the dog outside, so she's not in the same room.
She could be in the same room. Why not? As long as the dog is clean.
Yeah.
And there's no foul smell, then you can make all, you could dive in and make a bracha, it's not a problem. If it's foul smelling, then obviously you have to remove it. But if it's a clean dog, you can daven, you can say Kiddush, Agavdala, light the menorah, everything.
Okay.
Great. That's it. Part of the family. Neshama is part of the family.
Yeah.
That's it.
How do you feel about bar mitzvahs?
Bar mitzvahs, exactly. 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 All right, guys. Have yourself a great night and stay safe, everyone.
Yeah.
All the best.
Great job, bye.
Bark mitzvah.